Bulls are out of timeouts. 2 seconds left. Giddy for the win.
Through the city where the legends play, Chi-town vibes on a sunny day. Big red bus with the seats in line, talking Bulls all day, we stay on the grind. Rolling down the lane in the big red bus, see Red, Fred, and Doug bring the Bulls to discuss. From the Jordan days to the present fuss, it's gold in the convo, so ride with us.
Everybody, welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago. I look to my right, and lo and behold, it's the great one, Doug Tonis. Welcome back, brother. How you doing, my man?
I feel like it's been a while, and I'm especially sad to have missed the show with Mark, only because, you know, he said some stuff that upset me, and I did not get to respond. So both you guys did. I feel there was a little bit of poking in there. You know, just you guys were very unified in your takes that I would argue with.
Well, I think he was concerned about any Coldplay incidents with you since you are a captain of industry, you know, and I rest assured I did not think that was something that you would fall for. So I calmed him down there. I thought that was one of our friend Mark's better performances. I wasn't too upset about some of the things he said. What say you? What bothered you?
I was upset that you're like, what are the best weaknesses? And, you know, he was like the biggest Vooch guy ever, and he still can't admit that trade was lousy. He's like, oh, well, maybe it wasn't so great. But the biggest weakness was, you know, losing some trades on the margins or paying guys like $3 million too much. Like, if you had that $3 million back, could you trade it for two lottery picks and another pick that you lost in the Vooch trade because you had to dump Aminu's salary? Like, if you had saved those $5 million, you could have got those two lottery picks and a third first round back. No, you couldn't. It's like objectively way worse. It's not even close. It's like the dumbest argument ever. Like spending an extra $5 million a year is nowhere near as bad as pissing away lottery picks. I hate to break it to you. It's not.
You have to admit, you were one of the few people I heard who was right on that one. I'll give you a props.
This isn't about being right on or not. It's about, like, at this point, no one should be sitting there going, the problem is they paid Patrick Williams like $5 million too much and not that we lost multiple lottery picks. Like, that's dumb. Like, this is dumb. Like, yeah, it's bad that they maybe spent too much money on different guys, but giving away lottery picks is a way worse offense than spending extra money. This isn't, you know, so it's just, he still can't go back on that opinion. Like at this point, just call it a loss, right? Like, you weren't alone. 90% of the people thought that was a good move at the time. And so it's not like there's any shame in admitting, like, oh, wow, I was wrong. I've been wrong on tons of things. Like, I just don't know why he's still, like, hanging on to that one, like, 4 or 5 years later.
Are you kidding? It's Mark. Of course he's going to be stubborn and hold on to it. He could never admit the good moves from Garth Pax. What do you expect here? I agree, though. I mean, that's the bigger issue, is, like, you're going to be just as bad as our friends Acme if you can't admit when you made a mistake, right? Like, it was a massive mistake. How are people still saying that this is a good move or trying to justify?
Well, they're not. Only Mark is just like, and I think he knows it's a mistake now, but he just does not want to come out and say it. Even at the beginning, he's like, no, I haven't changed any of my opinions. So I was ready to bust his balls on that one if I was on the show, but I wasn't. So now I'm busting him asynchronously because I know he's going to hear this and he's going to complain in our mutual text thread later.
Well, what did I say that irritated you?
You and your dumbass thing about Caruso and the picks again. Like,
oh, here
just,
we go.
We were not going to get we were not going to get Caruso and we were not going to get Josh Giddey and a first. We just weren't. Like, we weren't. That wasn't. There's no way that was going to happen. You can argue that maybe we should have taken the picks and that would be fine. But then if you're just like, oh, we could have got a second rounder, who cares? If all we were missing was a second rounder, we could have got 3 second rounders for Andre Drummond. So bring that up and complain about it every show, but you don't. It's just like, it's a non sequitur.
Would you rather have a late first round pick at 29-30, or would you rather have a early second round pick at 1, 2, 3, or 4?
I don't think you would have got either of those things.
Oh,
I'm not sure which of them you'd have gotten. I don't know where the Thunder second rounders landed, if any of them were going to land in like the top five. off the top of my head. But
you've always been a somewhat far more negative on Alex Caruso than anyone else in this space.
We had other offers on the table. We knew what they were. We knew what they were.
Two first round picks.
No, no one was offering that in the summer. No one was offering that in the summer. The Knicks were maybe going to offer two in the 20s.
That's documented. We had not only two first round picks, one of them was a lottery pick. Yeah, albeit in a poor draft, the one where we got Modest. Hell, I would have loved to been able to get Zach Edey or, you know, player of that ilk in that.
That was at the trade deadline last year. Wasn't in the summer.
Right. Yeah, but for you to just say that wasn't on the table,
It wasn't on the table.
I don't believe it, Doug.
There were three offers reported, Fred. Why would that one not be reported if it was on the table?
Because maybe they didn't ask for it. I don't believe you when
We had three reported offers. You know they were canvassing the entire league.
I don't believe Oklahoma City would have been that dumb to say, you know what, we're not going to give up a first round.
But your belief is based on absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Everybody all over the league said that there were multiple offers. There would have been multiple offers for Caruso. Just because we don't have any that were substantiated doesn't mean that.
We have three substantiated offers. We have three substantiated offers, and they were the best ones.
Do you know how many late first round picks Oklahoma City had that are basically, I would rather have, as I just made my point, an early second round pick than a first round pick for the contract ramifications, etc. But
again,
there's
no reason to think it's true. You know why Oklahoma City has all those picks? Because they don't piss away picks. And they knew Giddey was more valuable than anything else we could get. We had no leverage.
Doug, how many picks did Oklahoma City give to the New York Knicks? How many? Five? They gave five picks to move like up two spots. So I think that contradicts your statement that they weren't willing to trade anything
their general manager is the
they didn't
best
have to,
general
the
manager in the league.
It doesn't mean it wasn't there. Like,
no, they didn't have to because they knew they had the best offer without throwing in any picks.
No, they didn't.
That's why they didn't.
No, they didn't know that.
We
cannot go down this road again. There are
well,
a couple
they knew
that
because we took
way
it.
Off
so
on.
We proved
this
it.
Is it.
We proved they had
this
the best offer. The facts show that they had the best offer without.
No, the facts show that Alex Caruso, they don't win the title without Alex Caruso.
Yeah, no,
so
that's fine.
Absolutely,
I agree.
They would have given up a late first-round pick and a lottery pick.
But we know for a fact that their offer was better than any other offer we wanted because it's the one we took. Like,
how do you know that? No, we don't. Maybe it's
we know it's the best offer from
these
the Bulls' perspective.
Probably just wanted Josh
from the
Giddey.
Bulls' perspective.
Every
from the Bulls' perspective, we knew it was the best offer because we took it
from Acme's perspective. I don't believe it was the best offer. I think there could have been an unprotected 2030 pick out there from the Lakers. Who knows what team would have given you that?
Yeah,
Denver
who
Nuggets.
Knows? But from what,
you
from what our
would
GM
you
wanted,
had that?
From what our GM wanted. What if we're going to go back to what I would do? 1,000 things I would have done different. But from what our GM wanted, Oklahoma City knew they had the best offer. They knew they didn't have to budge, and their GM is the best in the league. You weren't going to out-negotiate him when he already knew he was offering you more than any other team would offer you based on what you wanted. And that was the position they was actually in. Like, their GM knew that they had the best offer from our GM's perspective. Whether you and I would have done something different is completely true. You and I would have done a million things different than this franchise.
They offered a lottery pick and a first-round pick that's been documented at the trade deadline. They had obviously had a desire to get the services of Alex Caruso. And I think if
I don't remember, okay,
running the organization,
that was a different team offering that.
What's that?
No, that was an OKC offering that. That was a different organization offering that.
No, it was OKC. That was the rumor. It was OKC who offered the pick. So obviously they had a high degree of interest in the services of Alex Caruso.
There was that definitely is not my recollection of it. But anyway, okay.
Okay.
We'll talk about that. Either way, I'm still pissed at you.
Let's not go down this road because
we've gone down it a few times.
Because I know
you brought it up again.
I'm right.
You brought it up again and you said, why are you mad at me? So I'm telling you. That's why I'm mad at you. Yeah, ignoring this trade, if you're just saying, would I rather have a late first or an early second? If the late first was like well delayed or something, is that, we don't have to tie it back to this trade.
Like, would you rather have a 29th overall pick or first, like a first pick in the second round?
Well, the first pick in the second round is better.
Yes, agreed. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Exactly. So it depends where the second round pick is. Relative to the first round pick, I think a lot of these late first round picks, I've been going for a future show, I'm going to do a deep dive on how many of these like 20 to 30 picks really pan out. I got news for everyone. It's not great.
No, it's not great
at all.
Yeah,
it's
probably like if you're 25 to like 35 ish in the draft, like the marginal loss of upside is like very low. You know, it's like the odds of someone between 25 and 40 are not all that different in hitting. I mean, like, I don't know what the exact numbers are, but like something around that, right? Like the curve smooths out a lot. And then if you get a guy in the second round, you have like way more contractual optionality than if you get a guy in the first round. So it's like, you know, there's still like, it's like, I would say 25 is better than 35, but like the, where that optionality is probably not better than having 10 choices up further ahead. But if you get like to really close, like you're at like 28, 29, 30 versus 31, 32, 33, I would probably take the optionality over the couple guys going off the board.
Mm-hmm. But overall, though, there was a point that I was trying to make with Mark, and you haven't really touched on this, and I want to see if you agree with me. Would you at least concur that Acme has done better in the last, well, let's just say since the Patrick Williams negotiation was probably than the Deer, or close to it after the Boots trade? At least in the past year, they've done a little bit better.
Yeah.
I mean, Modest has turned out to be okay. I love the Okoro for ball move. You know, they haven't really – do you agree on that? Like, do you think, hey, at least it seems like they're turning some things around. I like how they're holding their negotiation stance, too, with Josh Giddey. What say you?
No, I agree. I don't have any faith in them. There's still, like, some really dumb things, like they passed on that Pelicans trade in the draft this year, which to me was just ridiculous. And so that overall feeling of that they're still chasing – mediocrity is still kind of there a little bit, and they're not willing to make high risk, high upside moves, and they still hate draft capital, and they're still just trying to rebuild really quickly. So there's still that fundamental theme that I don't like. But then on the flip side of it, they've not used any future assets to build the team they have. They got a lot younger than they were before. And, you know, so those moves feel a lot better. We now at least have a couple young prospects we can be excited about. And so, yeah, I think that's better. Relative to where they were a year ago, I feel pretty happy with where they landed. I also agree. I like the way they're playing hardball with Josh Giddey instead of just preemptively giving him whatever he wants with a fifth year player option. So I think that is good. It's still time. We still might end up on $150 million with the player option last year. Still possible, but, so far I think they look like a lot of the really obvious dumb mistakes that just kind of felt like laziness and lack of really being thorough in their job. Like a lot of those things feel a little bit more cleaned up now and like they're doing better. Like actually negotiating with Josh Giddey is a lot better than what they've done before. Not using all your future assets, you know, is better than just using them all on like these really short-term moves that don't feel like they're going to connect. So I think like some of those like really obvious bad things are improved. And that's great, right? Like that's way better than where it was. But strategically, I still think there's pretty big flaws in terms of what they're doing. Some of that might be driven by the organization. Like they might have a mandate, regardless of what they say, that they need to chase the playoffs every year. Like it can be very true that even though they say out loud in the interviews, they're allowed to rebuild, that they're really not, or, you know, they got the job because they don't want to ever have that mentality, and that's why they were hired. So while theoretically they can, it's just not in their DNA to do it. So, you know, some of those things I'm still not thrilled with, but some of them I think are definitely better, and I feel like people can improve and learn and get better at their jobs. I don't know how often, you know, we've known each other, like, God, that's like 20 years now. We both have had career changes. We've both moved into different roles and taking on more responsibility in our lives. And I think I could say every time I've changed a role, like I've had a learning curve, it got harder for me. And then I eventually got better at what I was doing. And so, you know, I'm definitely open that AK can be someone who gets better at what he's doing. Like this was his first time in this job. And the last year has been a lot stronger than previous years. And really outside of the Vooch trade at the very beginning, there's not that many things he's done that I think are just criminally stupid. I'd say the Vooch extension kind of applies there. Even the Patrick Williams extension, the only thing that upsets me, like if we landed on that same value, I wouldn't be mad about it. Like I get why they would have wanted to pay Pat Williams that. I was just mad that they did it before free agency started and they just preemptively gave him all this money. Like, there was a good chance the market was going to turn against him. And then when you look at what happened with Toppin and Okoro, it's clear that it would have turned against him if we had just held out. And so, you know, that process was bad, but that process was changed this year with Josh Giddey. Even though Josh Giddey is a guy we kind of have to keep from their perspective, like Patrick Williams was, because they traded for him and they have egg on their face if they let him go, they're still not letting that influence how they negotiate. So I think that's a big improvement. And so, yeah, I think I'm happy with some of the signs that they're learning how to do their jobs better. And hopefully that continues forward.
I feel though they shouldn't, if things get ridiculous, they shouldn't feel like they have to double down. Look at how the Bulls handed Tyrus Thomas. This is something I always go back to. Like, people don't remember this. Everybody just assumes Tyrus Thomas was a big bust. He was not a bust initially. He was like second team rookie, all rookie. And I was at many games, and I've said this on previous episodes, but I was at many games at the UC where that guy would have a block or some defensive play, and the entire stadium would be going nuts. I mean, he was an exciting, athletic player who never, you know, came close to realizing his potential. But when he got to that first contract, like, the Bulls kind of made a decision, well, you know, like, are we going to pay him or not? Because there were teams out there that did want to pay him. And they cut bait. They said, we don't think it's worth it. They ended up getting a future first-round pick, I believe, which actually was the second pick that they had in that, I think, eventually the trade for Doug McDermott, I believe, it eventually became. But regardless, they did get a first-round pick.
I thought it became the Nikola Mirotic pick, but maybe I'm wrong.
If that's the case, that's not a bad pick at 23. I mean, that's when they were really rolling with really good picks. That same Mirotić draft, pretty late. They also got Jimmy Butler at 30. So maybe you're right. But that said, I mean, they didn't double down, right? And that's where the issue has been. The Bulls doubled down on Vooch with a third year that no one was going to give him for $20 million. Now they can't trade him because of it. And then also with the third year, with the player option to Patrick Williams. And yeah, and you're right, though. I think it was proven based on how the market was with Okoro that absolutely they would have got less money, probably four or five million less per year. So, and that adds up as you go on. I did want to talk a little bit about Josh Giddey, though. I mean, people have been talking about this ad nauseum. We've got a staring contest right now. Most reports have it that they want 30. Bulls are about $10 million apart, according to Joe Colley in a recent article. Doug, what happens if I'm representing Josh Giddey and the Bulls don't move off of that? You know, they say, no, 21, 22, 23 in that range. And they're like, no, we want at least 27. If you're not going to give us 27 at a certain point this year, we're just going to take the qualifying offer and play it out. Would you move at that point if you're running the Bulls for 26, 27 million per year?
I've kind of just said 25 million is my cutoff for Josh Giddey. So yeah, that's my cutoff for Josh Giddey. Like, that's where I'm willing to go.
You're going to take the qualifying offer over $2 million.
Well, is he going to take the qualifying offer over $2 million? Like, I mean, that goes either way. So
I think there's a point where he will. Like, I don't feel like...
Okay.
It's not like he's been making nothing. He was a high draft pick. I think he made, what, $10 million last year? It's not like he's...
He's got a crap ton of endorsements in Australia, too. You got to remember, because he's, like, the most popular Australian player and the best Australian player in the league. Like, he's got... He has actually like way richer endorsements than a similar caliber US player would have, you know, for his ability. So he has a gazillion dollars. Like, he has generational wealth already. He doesn't need the money. But still, like, you know, the Bulls are the perfect situation for you to prove yourself in. Like, it's a team that's committed to you. Like, there's a lot of good things here. Like, any side trying to find a middle ground on a number, I would not weight it as like, oh, well, you know, we are losing him over this money versus he's losing us over this money. You know, it's like, so yeah, you each have lines. My line's 25 million. That's my line. Like, I'm already going up to get to 25 million versus what I want to pay him. And so that's the most I'm willing to go.
I think also too, his representation and the Bulls got to think about it. Like, what teams genuinely in 26 and 27 have the space and the desire to sign Josh Giddey as the primary ball handler? The only teams I was looking at that I could come up with are, I mean, every team can obviously make moves and free up more space, but the Utah Jazz, maybe that was one. I think they have like 9 million. If they make some moves and they trade Lauri Markkanen and whatever, they could probably get Josh Giddey if they feel like he would be a guy to add to that team, you know? But so that was one that kind of came up with, but the Nets were the other one. Nets didn't want him. The Nets clearly could have made this very difficult and gone after him. They need a primary ball handler. I'm running out of teams with the space and the need for a primary ball handler in Josh Giddey. So I think the Bulls are really in a strong position, and I'd advise Giddey's representation to, you know, gain a level of sanity, and let's say both parties come to a happy medium at $25 million a year, you know, for 4 years. I'd be fine with that.
I think the other angle that I've not heard talked about much, it may have been, but the thing I've not heard a lot of people talk about is Josh Giddey's agent probably has a lot to lose here if he doesn't get Josh a really big money deal. All of these agents who are smaller agents or whatever, they're always scared they're going to lose their clients to bigger deals. It's like, if you do not get your client something that feels like it's the most he could have gotten, it's really hard for you to then ever get another client again. And when you're a smaller group, that's always used against you. And I think a lot of times the people who do end up on the qualifying offer, even if it ends up working against them and isn't their best deal, end up on it because there's an agent that's pushing too hard for something for his client, because really he can't afford to take the loss either. But we'll see what happens. I think that's like another factor that's involved in this. You know, this is kind of a weird staring contest where probably in the grand scheme of things, Josh doesn't really need the money. He's probably generationally wealthy. But then at the same time, if you're already making, say, $30 million a year on endorsements, like and this is a good place and you want to be here, like, and you have the opportunity, why are you holding out over $2 million? Like, so if your total income is going to be like 54 versus 56, like, what do you really care? If this place allows you to actually showcase your talents the best and, you know, puts you in the best case to succeed, like, you might make more marketing in Chicago than you're going to be if you're in Utah, you know, yeah, given the stuff you have going on. So, like, you know, I think there's like a lot of like really weird angles here that go even beyond what the surface is. I don't know how many of those angles are really showing up in the negotiations or how each side is looking at those little things. But I think there's a lot of tough stuff, even beyond just the feeling of what his market value is to other teams, if there were teams in the market that had a lot of free agent space. So yeah, I still think Josh will be back. I think it's going to land at $25 million.
Okay. Well, yeah, and I'd be fine with that. And I think that's that's a win for the Bulls. Like, anything from 21 to 25 million for a player is 22 years old who's shown great promise and progression at the end of the year, I'm totally fine with that. He is a unique player. Like, his strengths are as primary ball handler, and there's a lot of questions. You got to build around him defensively because he's not a good defender. It's just like, I hope he kind of, in his representation, kind of realizes that, dude, you're not, although your stats are fantastic and you're, you know, there's a lot of good with what you bring, there's also a lot of bad, and it's very difficult to expect teams to kind of build around you, Josh Giddey. So we'll see what happens. But the other point I would like to throw out, one more point. Did you find it odd? It's been reported that not one team has called about a potential sign and trade for Josh Giddey. I know the whole deal with restricted free agency puts all the strength in the hands of the team that has the player, and I'm assuming most of the teams in the league obviously are assuming that the Bulls don't want to trade him, sign and trade him. But that said, you know, even some of the other guys who are restricted free agents, you do hear rumbles or rumors about teams that are actively trying to come up with a package to sign and trade for them. Not one team has offered to sign and trade for Josh Giddey. Do you think that's a little strange, and does that add some momentum and ammo to the Chicago Bulls?
I mean, I love the way that you said at the beginning of this show that I can't possibly know what every team would have offered for Alex Caruso. And then now you're saying, you know, for sure that no team has called and offered a sign and trade for Josh Giddey. Because that's been reported. So it feels like an equally unknowable thing. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, but how would anyone know? Like, how could you report like a negative? Like, I know this event that is unknowable has never happened.
There are reported interest in Jonathan Kuminga from the Suns. I can't remember the other team.
Yeah, sure. I agree. There's not a report. There's not a report of a Josh Giddey sign and trade, and they're very well made.
Right. That's what
I'm just busting your balls.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't actually need to argue about it.
you're trying to turn this into an attack somehow.
I am. I was having fun. That's why people listen to the show, Fred.
Good job. Well done.
No, but I think you're right. I think there probably aren't. I think the reason there probably aren't that you alluded to, which is that they don't think the Bulls are really seriously engaging in it. And the other reason, I just don't think anyone wants Josh Giddey. Like, I think the teams that maybe would want him are in the same boat as us. Like, they want him at a price that, you know, is low. They don't want him at a price that he wants. And so, you know, I think if someone came to Josh Giddey and was like, I'm willing to pay you $30 million a year in a sign-in trade, I think that would, they'd go to his agent and they would do that to pressure the Bulls. And I think Josh Giddey's agent would be out looking for that from other teams, right? Because if he could find a team that was willing to do that and pay Josh that money, it definitely puts a lot of pressure on the Bulls to match that, right? Because if he could find a team saying like, oh, well, they're willing to do this, we can get this next year, you know? So like, I mean, like, it, like if he has something like that in his back pocket, like that increases their negotiating leverage a ton. So, I agree that it probably just doesn't exist out there. And if so, that will also probably push Josh's salary down, right? Like, you can't even find a sign-in trade for this. Like, what are we talking about here?
You just got to look at the division. Detroit Pistons have zero interest in Josh Giddey. They already have their primary ball handler. Same with the Pacers. Although, you know, obviously Halliburton's out for a year. They're not going to move heaven and earth to get him this year, obviously, and with their current cap situation. Milwaukee is the only team that you can maybe say in a year, yeah, maybe they're interested in Josh Giddey. Who knows if they go through a rebuild and they end up trading Giannis. But again, I think there's it's really kind of tough to kind of see that or foresee that.
Well, you know, I mean, you're just looking at the division. I mean, there's 29 teams in the NBA. There's like other teams that might be interested, but I think in the end, ignoring that, I think it just comes down to no one's interested at the price Josh wants. Like, it's just a hard guy to build. Like, if you have them, I have him already. I get why you feel like I should extend him. He's talented. And that's the position the Bulls are in. But if you don't have Josh Giddey and you've got a collection of other guys and you're like, well, is Josh Giddey going to fit with our guys to the point where we're willing to pay him $30 million a year and give up something to the Bulls to get him? The answer for every team in the league is probably no. Like I said, I think if someone was yes, that would be out there because Josh's agent would have a huge, huge benefit to doing that. So yeah, I just think that combination of like, if you don't already have him, then you're looking at your team, like, would this guy fit in? And because Josh is such a unicorn, the answer is probably no for basically everyone.
Right. I think we've beat this story to death. I think my prediction is, I think they'll come to agreement sometime in August. And it'll probably be $25 million a year for 4 years, hopefully with a team option in year five. But I think it's going to be 25 for four. What say you? Prediction?
I think it'll be about that. Whether it's the other thing I'll say is I think there might be an option for like a three-year deal. If Josh is really hung up on like getting more money, I think the option there is you do a three-year deal and be like, hey, we'll pay you a little bit more than the qualifying offer for, you'll get you out in 3 years, and then you can try the market in 3 years. Like, you know, if you want to hit the market faster, I think that would be the other thing that's possible. I don't think Josh is maybe going to want to do 4 years or five years at 25. I think he'll probably want to hit the market sooner.
I tell you what, if they move to $30 million a year, I'd almost want a 3 year contract with a team option on four. Cause I don't feel great about that. $120 million, 4 years. I guess he'll, no matter what, you know, I can't see a situation where Josh Giddey's going to be turning into Patrick Williams. But, I mean, he does enough good, and he'll put up enough stats every year that somebody will consider him valuable.
You know,
I think it would be shocking.
I'm going to throw this out there for you, Fred. If you look at the first 50-something games last year before the All-Star break, like, I would have said Josh Giddey is a mid-level exception player.
Yeah.
And so that was two-thirds of the season. So one-third of the season, he's played a lot better than that. So the idea that he can't actually be worse, I don't know why you would say we're going to ignore two-thirds of the season and only look at the last one-third of the season, largely against teams that were tanking or a few teams that were like winning teams, but like Denver, they didn't have Jokic, or Indiana didn't have Halliburton. So there's ample reason to be very suspicious about that small stretch, right? And think like, yeah, you could, and he shot 45% from three over to like the end of the season. There is no fucking way that is going to happen again over a long period of time. No chance. 0% chance. And if you dropped his 3-point percentage to 38% over that time, his true shooting percentage falls below league average. So he was kind of like an efficient scorer over that stretch, but it's only because he had this completely unsustainable 3-point shooting. And he was like totally wide open.
Not only because of that, he got to the line a lot.
I did the math on this. If you prorate down his 3-point percentage down to a normal level, he no longer was above league average in true shooting percentage.
Even with all the additional free throw attempts.
No, he's still slightly below, very slightly below. Like it's like 57% instead of 57.5%. But so down to like where I believe is like 3-point shooting is going to drop. And now he's like a league average scorer and a really poor defender. Like it's just not hard for me to see where that's a mid-level exception player. Like it just isn't. Like, so I do think there's like downside here. Like I don't think he's going to turn into like someone you're like, well, we can't even play him. Like the worst case is he's like, well, he's kind of like your bench guard and or whatever. Like he'll still at least be second unit worthy, like leading the second unit. Like that's the floor, but like it is not hard for me to see where that still is where he ends up in the long run.
Well said. That's a great point. Now I'm kind of concerned. I got to do the math on it. In my head, Doug, I agree with you 100% on his 3-point shooting is fool's gold. Like I don't believe it's going to stick. And I think as soon as guys start guarding him, you know, a little bit more, it's going to go back to his low 30s there. But yeah, I did take solace in the fact that he did get to the line a lot more. I thought he was way better at that, drawing fouls and getting points from the free throw.
I like that he got back to the line more.
Celebrate. Yeah, something to celebrate and something to, you know, feel a lot better about in terms of his game developing. Because when you see that, all right, or now he's got a way to get to the line and become a valuable player, and he's a good free throw shooter. I didn't realize it was that he would have been below league average at a true shooting percentage. I just assumed that this free throw percentage and his numbers made it significantly higher than that. So really good argument. Well said. Let's get him at $20 million a year. I don't know. Are you there? I lose you?
I'm here.
Let's put a bow on that one. Let's go on to the next topic. I did want to talk about Billy Donovan's extension. Bulls announced on Sunday, the worst kept secret in town, that he got an extension. Any thoughts on this? This is the one area with Bulls fans I think I am massive disagreement with. And I would say the majority of fans seem to be outraged by it. And another reason not to pay attention to the Chicago Bulls. I just don't get it. I think Bill Donovan's a very good coach. It was the best move, I think, from Acme to get this guy to coach his team. I don't think there's been a ton of talent on the team outside of 22-23 when, you know, everybody was healthy for the most part up until at least the end of January. He put up results, and I think they've outplayed. I mean, it's a fact. They've done better for the most part than what Vegas had him putting up almost every year. So I think he's a good coach, and his team plays hard for him. What say you?
It'll be boring radio, but I mostly agree with everything you said. So I'm just going to double down on what you said and throw you a different argument. I think most outlets and most people are terrible about judging coaches. They're just awful about it. You know, it's like they largely think coaches make this massive impact on wins, and they really don't. That's why coaches make like less than the mid-level exception, right? Like if a mid-level exception player is like your sixth best player and you pay that guy like $12 million and like his impact on your win total is like very small, you pay your head coach less than that. So like you're paying your head, like that is how much teams think a head coach matters, like less than that. Maybe not because, like if you put you or me there, it would be, obviously way worse. But like if you think of the top 30 guys in the world, the difference between them is really not so high. You know, it's just not that big. And so, I don't think head coaches make that big a difference in win total in general. And so if your head coach is in line with what senior management wants to do and he keeps your players, you know, motivated and he's able to get them to buy into the system and he's, you know, able to work well with them and develop people, then like, I think there's like actually just very little room for improvement if you fire a coach. And Billy Donovan does all those things. So yeah, I mean, I think he's clearly a qualified, smart guy. Every time you listen to him on a post game, very well spoken, knows what he's talking about. Players believe in him. They never drop the rope. They never quit. There's not locker room dissent. He even made up with Zach LaVine. You know, like I think he's fine. Like Is he a top 10 coach? Maybe, maybe not, like in the right or wrong situation, but he's most definitely not a bottom 10 coach. And if you are going to go and say like, well, you fire him, what are you going to do after that? It's almost certainly bring in like some random assistant who 95% chance is going to be worse than Billy Donovan. And then if you look at where the Bulls are, like, what do you think they're a coach away from doing? Like, if you had the next Tom Thibodeau, like, if you got lucky and you got like that 5% assistant who becomes a really good head coach, or the next Eric Spoelstra or whatever, because I know you don't like Thibs, so I don't want to get sidetracked there. If you got the next Eric Spoelstra, like, your odds of that are one, really low. But if you do, like, what would that do for us at this point? Like, we're still rebuilding, we're still doing whatever. Like, so I think it's like the upside of replacing him is like super low. The downside is actually much higher, especially given the type of person we're likely to pursue. So, you know, I'm not going to stand up and slow clap for it or anything, but you know, it's a fine move. There's nothing wrong with it.
I agree. I shared this on X, but I think the biggest thing that bothers me is that there's a lot of these people thrown out there. Doesn't play rookies, doesn't develop anybody. Billy Donovan, like, he plays rookies when the front office prioritizes development over winning, as he did in his first year as a coach. When the rookie, and then also when the rookie, you know, deserves it, like Io did. So Pat Williams started 71 games in his rookie season. He almost played 2,000 minutes. He had the worst plus-minus on the team for the year. Settle down, Doug. I know you're upset by that stat, but there's a reason why, because he played at half speed. He didn't rebound. He wasn't as good as Thad Young. He was awful defensively off ball. He sucked his rookie year, and he still played almost 2,000 minutes. So this idea that he doesn't play rookies is ridiculous. It's not true. It's not accurate. And he played Io, too. The whole issue with Modest, you know, like, I think that's where a lot of anger is. Like, people felt like he should have played a lot more last year. I think it's kind of understated or under discussed, like, how negative that could turn pretty quickly within a team with a lot of players who are all pretty equal. If, regardless of what you feel about the Bulls roster, there's a lot of guys on the roster that are all pretty equal. They're not that different, right? You know, I think you would concur with that, right? It's kind of like there's not a lot of uber talent, but it's a pretty deep roster. Like, there's a lot of guys probably at 10, 11, or 12 that aren't that far away from the guys at 3, 4, 5, right?
Sure, yeah. You when your roster is 18, bad, that's usually true.
Yeah, 18 or 19. Well, sometimes. 18 or 19. You know, when you're 18 or 19 years old, you come in, you get drafted, and you're in the locker room, and you're handed minutes you didn't deserve. I think that could go bad really quick. I don't care how confident and how, you know, how much moxie Modest has, especially if you're not playing well. And that's the fact that no one ever wants to mention. He didn't play well. He didn't play well to the end of the season. Like, overall, he played well for a rookie. He showed a lot of, like, nice little dunks and had a lot of good moments. But overall, he was not good. Especially when he went into the starting lineup for his first 10 games. Look up those stats. So, you know, I thought he played really well at the end of the season. And I think, I don't know why you have to keep on harping on it. Well, Billy Donovan didn't handle him correctly. And he actually, you know, probably retarded his development. It's not true. If anything, I think it's the other way. And there's a quote from Modest. I'll read it right here. He challenges me in practice. I thank him for that. He's been a huge part of my development and probably the best coach I've ever had. Modest Bozelis and Billy Donovan. I know a lot of people are saying, well, yeah, of course he's going to say that. Whatever. It's true. It's absolutely freaking true. So this idea that he doesn't play rookies, one. This idea that he doesn't develop players, that's wrong. Coby White's gotten a lot better in the years under Billy Donovan. You look out throughout his career, he's done a lot to develop players. So I'm happy with the decision. I think we both are. And I agree with everything you said. I think you agree with everything I've said. Correct?
Yeah. The only thing I'll say is I'm not upset that he didn't play Modest more than he did. But I would have preferred he played him more, despite Modest not playing bad. Because you think about the guys who played, like, well, we played Julian Phillips a ton. Like, Julian Phillips sucked balls. Like you want to tell me we couldn't have given, like, half of Julian
Phillips? He didn't play
Phillips
him a ton. More?
Well, he played him 1,100 minutes. He could have played him 0 minutes. Like, there's not, like, a reason that Julian Phillips needed a minute. So, like, we played Talen Horton Tucker 700 minutes. Like, we couldn't have found some of those minutes for Modest. You know, like, so I guess it's not that I'm not upset with, yeah, I generally agree with, like, he's played rookies. He's played Patrick Williams a crap ton, even though he sucked a lot of that time. And so I don't think it's bad. I think there was room to give Modest more minutes, but Modest, like you said, he was brutal to start the year. So I think that's okay. I'm also fine exactly how it played out. Like, there's nothing that was, like, so bad there that's like, oh, wow, this is terrible. Like, Donovan has showed flexibility in this stance, in this area before. And so I would have wished he had a little bit more with Modest. But as a trend, I don't think it's a problem he has. And with Modest specifically, while I think it would have been nice to see a little bit more, especially because he came on so strong at the end of the year, and maybe you could have gotten a little bit earlier with that, I don't think it really matters. I don't think it matters. Like, he got to practice a ton. He got where he needed to go. I don't think if he had played 500 more minutes in the NBA, it would have really made any meaningful difference. You know, he probably practiced like 10,000 minutes or something like over the year. Like, I just don't know that was going to be the big difference maker. And I think going into this year, we expect him to play a whole ton of minutes. So like, I don't think it's a huge problem. And it's certainly not a concern with like Noah, coming in for me, because Noah's going to be in the same boat. Like, Noah's going to be terrible right away. And I don't think he should play a lot of minutes, most likely. Right away, and he'll probably play an appropriate amount, and it might be 1500 like Modest this year. And if so, that's also fine, because he's a prospect that's going to need some time.
Well said. Let's get into the final topic. Vegas win totals for the Bulls are at 32.5, above or below. Where do you got them?
Am I wrong? That seems insanely low. Like, I'm not a professional gambler, but like, or even a non-professional gambler. I don't gamble at all. I know like it's super big these days. I tend to have like an addictive personality, and I feel like if I ever started sports gambling, I would just never stop. So I'm just not going to start. But that feels like incredibly low to me. Like, I feel like it should be like 37, 38. I don't know, like the team they had that ended last year, I know it was like a super weak schedule. Like, that's going to be the same team that's this year. And the thing is, like, you know, the Bulls are not going to tank at the end of the year, no matter what happens. Like, it's just not going to. So the fact that, you know, this team will like fight for the play-in like the entire year just feels to me like they're going to do better. Like, so they're going to pick up all these wins at the end of the year against teams that don't want them, which they've done several years. And they've had 3 years around the same win total. You know, this past year, the version of the team, because they had two pretty distinct versions of the team, the one that got all the wins is the one that's coming back. I just don't see a reason to think they're going to be significantly worse than they were last year. And, you know, it's what they were, 39 wins last year, 40. I forget the exact total they ended with, but like, basically say you're like 7 wins worse than last year. And the version that was above 500, that was like 19 and whatever it was. Like, I don't know. It feels really weird to me. Like, I don't expect them to win 45 or anything, but I would put that number, if I was an odds maker, I'd be thinking it's like 37, 38.
Yeah, the only thing I could figure is that maybe they felt the Bulls were remarkably healthy last year, and they kind of were. I mean, they had the IO injury, which obviously didn't help them, but they had a mountain of guards. You know, it's not like they made the trade for Zach LaVine. They brought in, you know, 3 rotational players, essentially. You know, so yeah. I kind of agree.
I feel they're
with
so
you.
Like, deep this year, though. Like,
what's that?
They're so deep this year.
I agree.
Who would get hurt that you'd be like, oh, they can't recover from that this year? Like, compared to past years, like, it's like maybe Kobe White would be the guy you don't want to lose. Like,
exactly. But he never gets hurt. Exactly.
Yeah. And even if he did, like, even then, I don't think it would be that bad. Like, you still would have Giddy, Io, Trey Jones.
You got Okoro, Patrick Williams.
Herder, like, just feel like there's so many options. Like, I don't know, even like Javon Carter, if you had to like bring him off the bench, I feel it could give you okay minutes. Like, yeah, it feels weird to me. Like, I don't, and that's like their worst injury. Like, I feel like even if they lost Giddy, they'd lose almost nothing. Like, if you just had to run with like Io, Trey, and Kobe and Herter as your point guard, shooting guard minutes, like, I feel you'd be fine for a long stretch.
Certainly, yeah. Better.
Well, Okoro I view as more of a small forward, but regardless, like, yeah, like, I feel like they've just got a pretty good amount of depth. They don't have like a lot of like high end pieces. Like, I don't know, there's a really good 1-3 option on the team, but like, they have so many like 4-10 guys. Like, they've got like a whole roster full of guys. So I feel like they could lose a guy and it wouldn't do much to them. So yeah, it feels really strange. I wonder if a little bit is like the risk of Josh Giddey not coming back is like factored in there. Like if he didn't somehow sign and he's not signed yet, like maybe that would be a big factor. But the thing is, like, you know, he's going to be back next year, right? Like it's going to be the qualifying offer or a long-term offer, but there's no way it's going to be gone.
Yeah. And even so, if he takes a qualifying offer, he's going to be playing like a madman. It's going to be good.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know. That feels really weird to me. Like, and again, I'm not a gambler. So maybe there's lots of reasons the odds are where they are, but this screams to me to take the over.
I agree with you 100%. I predicted like 35, 39 wins. And they're in the East. They play 52 games against the East. It's a weak East.
Yeah, the East is the worst it's ever been. Like, has the East ever been this bad? Like, the East has been so bad for so long, and I don't think it's ever been this bad. Like, it's so bad. I don't know. It feels really strange to me. Like, you know, Indiana is going to be way worse. Milwaukee is going to be worse. Maybe Philadelphia like steps forward, but like how much forward? Maybe like Detroit or Orlando. You know, Orlando had a lot of health problems last year. Maybe they're healthier. Maybe Detroit steps forward, but Atlanta had a really good offseason. They might be better. Miami doesn't seem any better. Like, I don't know. I feel like even the teams that are better are not like amazing. They're just kind of, you know, like maybe you have a couple new 50 win teams.
The last topic before we bring the bus in, the Tim Bontemps ESPN article created some buzz. And basically he ranked the 14 teams that did not make the playoffs. Obviously the Bulls were in that 14 team race. And he's kind of calling it NBA rebuild rankings when I don't know how you could really say Dallas is trying to rebuild or, you know, the Spurs. I mean, those teams have a ton of talent that are right there. I did want to get your opinion on, like, so they had the Bulls 11th, right? And they had them ahead of, were three teams? The Suns,
which Sacramento, the Pelicans, and the Suns.
Yeah, the Pelicans, seeing the Pelicans are just get you more upset that they could have had, likely could have had the offer getting their pick next year. Lottery unprotected would just insane. They passed up on that opportunity. But do you feel that's fair? I mean, the teams ahead of them, I'm gonna read them to you right now. The Portland Trail Blazers, the Raptors, the Utah Jazz, the Nets. You know, I think the Bulls are in a better position than the Nets. The Utah Jazz, the Charlotte Hornets, the Wizards. Why are the Wizards ahead of the Bulls? The Sixers. Come on, dude. Sixers are none. They got two of the worst contracts in anyhow. What say you? What was your opinion on that? And do you feel it's accurate?
I would maybe put the 76ers as worse just because of their contract situation. I guess the reason they're ahead of them is like the fringe chance that like Embiid just comes back really healthy and George comes back healthy and then they just can do something this year. And I think we would say that's a fringe chance, right? But I think that's the reason you would put them ahead of them is like they might actually they have like a path to be actually a really good team this year. Like, even if you think that's a small path, and I do think that's kind of a small path, but that path is there. San Antonio is clearly better. Dallas is clearly better. Atlanta is clearly better. I think it gets interesting with like the Wizards and the Hornets. And I think really what you come down to here in the Jazz and Nets, I guess, are in this boat as well, is that they're like, well, all these teams, they just are not locked into as much dumb stuff as the Bulls. Like the Bulls are going to lock themselves into Josh Giddey. They're locked into Patrick Williams. And you'd rather just have more total prospects and more draft picks, or those teams at least have like some prospect you're really excited about. And the Bulls don't have any of it. So you're like, I think what they're looking at the Bulls is like the way they're going now, there's basically no path outside of Modis and Noah becoming stars that leads them to a title. Like they're on a path to be like a first round exit upside team. And while it's like unlikely that one of those other paths are to lead to a championship team for those other teams, like those teams are not making build decisions right now that aim for like a first round exit. And it feels like the Bulls are making decisions that aim for a first round exit. And if we looked at like the Kings, who are like below the Bulls, right? They're the team after the Bulls, like the Kings are probably going to be better than most of those teams ahead of them on the list. But they're also a team where it's like, yeah, but you have no path to go from like 40 wins to something better. And you could see how the Kings might win 40, but they have no path to do better than that. And I think that's the argument against the Bulls in this article. Not that they're going to necessarily be the worst of all these teams, but that they're not building towards something where there's a path where you feel like they have the high upside. Because the article is about like championship equity, like having a chance to win a championship. And the Bulls aren't on a path that feels like that really has any chance. I don't think it's entirely fair. I'm not, you know, if you put the Bulls five spots higher in this list, I don't think it would be any more right or wrong than it is. I guess I'll put it that way. Like, I just think it's like so many of these teams, you'd be arguing like, well, what the Bulls have like a 1% chance at a title and this other team is like a 1.5% chance. Like, but the Bulls are probably going to be better than several of those teams. So like, I'd probably rather have the Bulls roster right now, even if I didn't think it was going to be a championship roster, than to have like the Wizards roster and say like, well, at least they have more options open to them because they're getting picks and they're going to be really bad for 3 years. Like, you know, if the Bulls just decided to do that, they might be better positioned than the Wizards. So, you know, I don't know. I think I probably would put the Bulls a little higher on this list, but it does show you a little bit of how the league maybe correctly views us as not like seriously trying to build championship equity.
I just think it's hard to penalize a team that has Kobe White, you know, entering his prime. He still hasn't hit his prime.
He's going to be an unrestricted free agent. So you can't count on him. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent. So you can't count on him being here.
Good point. Well said. Yeah, well said. I guess you could say the same thing about Josh Giddey. But Modest Buzelis, obviously a young player that there's a lot of excitement around. And they still have every one of their first-round picks now going forward. They don't have to give any away. Still have the Portland pick also that's out there.
Their future roster, if you were to go like 1 year out, their future roster is Modest Buzelis, Noah Esenge, probably Josh Giddey, Patrick Williams, and 1 year of Isaac Okoro, who will then be unrestricted afterwards, and then a bunch of cap space. And so, you know, if you're trying to project out the future, it's just
maybe Kobe, maybe Io. We don't know, right?
Yeah, maybe Kobe or Io. But if you have them, it'll be you'll be the high bidder, right? They'll be unrestricted free agents. And so if you're the high bidder, you can keep them. But then usually that means the contract is not super great, right? Unlike Josh Giddey, you now have to kind of proactively bid on those guys. So it's like, even if you think Io is worth 25, you might have to bid 30, like on day one. Yeah, not Io, Kobe White or whatever Io is worth, you know, both those guys' deals will be built on what they do this year, which is another reason to think you should take the over, because those guys who are unrestricted should be like playing their asses off. Like, it's like maybe the difference, like for Io, it's like right now he's coming off a bad year. He's like almost been an every other year player. Like, if he has a good year, he could get like $25 million a year, $30 million a year.
Oh, geez. I don't think it's that high. I think his max, I mean, that would take a massive jump. Like, if Io does what he usually does in a good year, what's he worth? $15 million a year?
I think he'll be worth more than that. I guess it's hard to say. It's hard to say. Like, it's just really out there, because I think he can be a plus defender. Like, I think he could be a starting caliber. Like, I could see Io being in a good year as valuable as Josh Giddey. Like, in different ways. You know, like, if he shot 40% from three this year, you know, like, where like he's kind of an every other year shooter. If he ended up shooting 40% from three this year on decent volume, and if he put up like his per 36 numbers like a year ago were like 15 points, 4 assists, you know, like over a steal a game, a half block, you know, and gives you good defense and good efficient offense, like, I could just see him being like a $20 million like super neat role player that can fit in anywhere you want. You know, kind of like an Alex Caruso type. So, you know, it's hard to say. Like, it's not hard for me to see him. I don't think that's going to happen necessarily, right? Like, I always look at the most recent data, but it's not like it's crazy to assume, you know, he's hurt last year. If you went back a year ago and then you just assume he has 2 years of iterative improvement over last year, the 2023-24 season. Like, if last year was just a down year because of the injuries, and he kind of comes back to what you would expect to be 2 years of improvement from the season 2 years ago, he could easily be a $25 to $30 million player. Again, I don't know if that's going to happen. And so it's just like, it's really widely unknown. And same with Kobe White. Like, Kobe has a huge scoring season and he's has a year kind of similar to what he closed out this last year with. He's going to be the next Zach LaVine, where you're going to max him and then you're going to hate him every day after that. So that, I also don't think that will happen, but but it's like not out of the realm of possibility or reasonability that it could happen.
The one thing that really stuck with me was he had the Wizards 5 and the Bulls 11. I'm like, what world are the Wizards in a better shape than the Bulls, really? Like, would you really want to make the argument you'd rather have Alex Starr and or Bob Carrington over Modest? I wouldn't. I think Modest has shown, I don't know, maybe I got to do a deep dive on Alex Starr. I thought Modest showed enough, you know, to say, and what else do they have? They have absolutely nothing other than their draft picks, right? You know, it's not like that team sucks, and there's not a lot to be excited about with that team at all. So I don't know. It's just like you got them fifth and you got the Bulls 11, just because I guess you're assuming that they're going to be so bad they'll be in the lottery next year. There's a much better chance of the Wizards being bad and getting a high lottery pick than the Bulls, but obviously that didn't work for them this past summer, you know, so we'll see. I don't know. There's a general tendency from the national media to just totally, you know, rip on the Bulls for everything they do. I saw Bill Simmons say that, and he had them as the worst future, and I think the whole league, which I think is a ridiculous statement. Like, there are several teams I would not – listen, I'm not bullish on it by any means, but I'd rather have the Bulls situation than at least 5 to 10 teams in the league. I think – would you concur on that? Like, if you wanted to trade any situation, any roster right now, I think you can make the argument the Bulls are probably somewhere between 15 and 25. But they're not – I wouldn't want to trade.
They sure as hell aren't 15. Get the hell out of here.
Well, maybe not 15. No, maybe 17.
So I would say 18. They're probably between like 19 and 26.
All right, let me throw this out there. Would you rather have the Sixers situation or the Bulls?
Probably the Sixers.
See, I wouldn't. I think those two contracts are so freaking awful. Yeah, if Embiid's healthy, he's not going to be healthy. Even when he was healthy, they don't win anything. Like, I'd rather have the Bulls situation. You got a lot more flexibility. I mean, just run through every team. Atlanta? Well, Atlanta, I'd rather have Atlanta. Absolutely. Would you rather have the Wizards or the Bulls? Bulls, right?
Come Maybe.
On. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. I don't want to run through 30 teams because of waste of time. I just told you my range is probably 19 to 26. There's no way there are more than 10 teams in the league that I would rather have than the Bulls. Like, there's no way. So it's like, yeah, I agree. Like, maybe, you know, like having them at like 26, is that, or 27 would be where they rank them. Like, that might, I think that's probably a little low, but I don't think it's that low. Like, I guess if I was going to spot check it, I'd say I put them around 22.
All right, my man. On that note, let's bring in the BRB. Another great show. So good to have you back, DT. I'm going to start really trying to be flexible because I think there is I could sense on the last show in the audience. I mean, there were a few massive fans of Mark, but in general, there's like you almost sense a general awe or aura of a sigh that you weren't on in Mark. Although he did his best replacing you, it was a step down.
I love the way that you have sensed an aura from a crowd that is not listening live and feedback that we did not receive. You just clearly invented this aura entirely in your head, which is awesome. So all that means is you like me more than Mark, and so I'm thrilled and I will accept the compliment.
One last note. Thanks to everyone. I was shocked at the amount of people that reached out for the special MP3 bonus that we at the end of the last show that I agreed to send directly. It spent a good part of my Saturday evening sending those out to all the individual emails. I really appreciate your – all those are the diehards, Doug. And one of these days, I'm actually going to buy – you know, we're going to pull the curtain back here. We don't actually have a real bus. It's like a metaphysical bus that we take out on this road and more like a spiritual bus. But one of these days, I'm going to actually buy a big bus and we'll take our most diehard fans out, and it's Tour Chicago. What say you?
I mean, are you going to rent a bus?
Like, no,
I'm going to really buy a bus. I mean, it feels like, what are you going to do with a bus? I just have serious doubts about this.
I think it'd be awesome. I would love it. I think
they have big red bus tours in Chicago. We could rent the big red bus for a day. I bet, you know, and get one that says
I prefer to own rather than rent, but we'll see.
I understand. I don't know that a bus is a thing you want to own. This feels even more like the category of the boat that you want to know someone who owns a boat, but you don't want to own a boat. I think like a bus is even like two steps more removed from wanting to own it. Like,
maybe you're right. Yeah.
We could maybe get to the big red RV. You know, if we got the big red RV, that might be more fun. I could see owning an RV. You know,
I prefer the bus.
It doesn't roll off the tongue, though, you know.
And I'm the only guy with the speaker, you know, everybody behave, announce all that stuff. All right, my man. And then let's bring it in. Awesome talking to you, DT, and looking forward to next time. Until next time, let's go Bulls.
Go Bulls.